Welcome our speaker tonight, Bill, from Working With Others in Netcong, New Jersey.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bill Hansen. I'm an alcoholic. But for the grace of God, through the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, strong sponsorship, 12 steps, 12 traditions, I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink of alcohol since my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, September 30th, 1975. And I'm as grateful as I know how to be. I've been taught how to introduce myself. The members of my group introduce themselves that way. I ain't a joiner, but I have a home group, and I want to be in that home group, and I want to be a group member. I had a sponsor for the better part of 30 years, and that sponsor died. So I looked for a new sponsor. I found the Working With Others group in Netcong. Sponsor was in that group. I asked him to be my sponsor. And he said, well, I got conditions. That's it. He says, yep. He says, I want to see you at one meeting a week where I'm at. You got any problems with that? I said, no, sir, I ain't got no problem with that. So I'm going to go through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and do the steps according to the way they're written in the big book. You got a problem with that? No problem with that. He says, whenever you stand at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want you to wear a jacket and tie. You got any problem with that? No, sir. Got no problem with that. He says, we're in business. That's for me, I ain't here. That sponsor knows where I am right now. And like I just said, I don't want nobody to know where I am prior to Alcoholics Anonymous. He knows where I am. He knows what I'm doing. And he also said he wanted me to call once a week, Wednesday night at 9:10. Not 9:05 and not 9:15. He said, you got a problem with that? I said, no, sir, I got no problem with that. And I call him Wednesday night at 9:10. And he answers the phone. He thinks he's accountable to me. Interesting. He's teaching me about accountability. He's teaching me about reliability. And I always need lessons in that. I always do. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous not because I was alcoholic, not because I wanted to stop drinking, not because I wanted to become a better person, and I certainly didn't want to hear about God. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm an approval seeker. I don't know if anybody knows about that. About being a people pleaser. And in my case, there was a judge over in New Brunswick. I needed him to like me. And he thought it was a good idea I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, if that judge thought it was a good idea that I went to Kangaroos Anonymous, I'd be here tonight telling you I'm a kangaroo. He had 15 years in prison waiting for the sweetheart. And I'm a sissy with a big mouth. I ain't going to make it in prison. So I needed that judge to like me. And I was going to do whatever he wanted me to do. The end result of that as when I stood before him months later. He said, you've been going to Alcoholics Anonymous, you've been staying clean, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to give you those 15 years, and then I'm going to suspend them. And he says, I don't want to ever see you in my court again. And he hasn't. So my first meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous, I walked in and there was about 12 people sitting around in a circle, no table. Just, I don't know how they knew I was new. But they decided, they made a decision that day, that night. They made a decision to talk about the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous for me. For me. And I was going there to pull one more scam, do one more con, get the heat off one more time, and live happily ever after. Now, they talked about two things that night that really, really impressed me. The first thing they talked about loneliness. And they talked about loneliness like I knew it. I didn't think anybody knew. I didn't think anybody knew what it was like to be as alone as I was. And the only way I can describe that loneliness is I felt like I had a little jar covering me from head to toe. I could see you. You could see me. We might be able to talk about these lights or this coffee cup. But something separated me from you. And it was right there. And right there. And right there. Right there. And that something became so real for me. I could almost knock on it. And I was alone. And what would I do? I'd have a drink. It's gone. And something strange would happen to me. You're my buddy. I like you. Half hour from now, I'm going to try and stab you. But right now, you're my buddy. Let's have another. Let's have another. And I was experiencing what the big book talks about, the phenomena of craving. And I did not know I was having a craving. I was just having another. So the loneliness that you people knew about and I didn't tell you, how do you know about that? Now, the other thing they talked about, which kind of sounded kind of wacky to begin with, took me a while to really get it. They talked about the first drink as if it was a problem. I don't know about you, but first drink is magical. First drink is wonderful, man. The first drink... I can breathe, man. I can breathe. My skin fits. How can that be a problem? What do you... They say, well, that's an alcoholic reaction. What? Yeah. Social drinkers don't feel that way. I said, really? So they got my attention. And the judge was watching. So I started to come to meetings. And man, did I like what I heard. First things first, one day at a time, easy does it, cha-cha-cha, you know. And it was like, man, this is pretty cool. I could use some of this stuff, man. This is really cool. So because the judge was watching, I was going on a regular basis, man. I was just doing meeting after meeting after meeting because I don't want to go to prison. I ain't making it in prison. This is my only hope here. Now, after about 11 months, I'm from Jersey, so I was sitting on Sandy Hook and down the beach down there, and I had a cup of coffee, and I'm crying. And I'm down here all by myself. There ain't nobody else down there. And I'm crying because I don't want to be no alcoholic no more. I don't want to come to these crappy meetings. The more you people talk about drinking, the thirstier I get. Oh man, I want to drink. I want to drink. How can this be? I'm going 11 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I became the AA poster boy. I knew everything, man. First things first, but for the grace of God, I came to believe. And I want to drink. Oh my God. I got in my car. And now I'm really crying. And I've done something that was really strange for me to do. And I heard about it here. I talked to this God I didn't believe in. And I said, well, I don't know if you're up there. I don't know where the hell you are. And I don't even know if I believe in you. But I need help, man. Because I don't know how to do this. I want to drink. And I thought, oh my God. I don't know how to do this. And I didn't drink. Now, I don't know about you, but that's pretty impressive in my life. I wanted to drink. My eyeballs wanted to drink. My fingernails wanted to drink. Every hair on my arm wanted to drink. I asked this God I didn't believe in to help me not drink. And I didn't drink. So AA was starting to work for me in spite of myself. And I began my recovery. To tell you a little bit about myself and my background. My father was alcoholic. He was my hero. I can bring you into parts of New Jersey, and I can show you whole streets that this guy built. Every house on the street, he built them. He was a walking, talking dynamo. And he was my hero. And he was alcoholic. And I watched slowly but surely him getting a little louder as time went on, a little more louder. As time went on, he started playing with guns. And he walked into the police station. We lived a block away from the police station. And he had a little problem with authority. I don't know if anybody gets that, you know. All right, but he walked into the police station with a loaded revolver and he held it against the sergeant's head. And when they disarmed him, they put him in prison. Now, when I was a little boy, about 5 or 6 years old, he told me that he started drinking when I was born, kind of messing with me, but he'd tell a little boy that, and you know, I kind of believed it. It was my fault. It was always my fault, you know. And this family, you know, I got two older brothers, three younger sisters, a younger brother. He's getting nastier and nastier. She's getting crazier and crazier. It's all my fault, man. There's got to be something I can do. There's got to be something I can do. Man. This is all my fault. Now he's in prison. This is all my fault. And it was arranged. You know, we were too young to go into the prison to see him, so it was arranged that on Sundays we would go down there, and my three younger sisters would wait for him to stick his finger out through the screen, and my sisters would visit my father's finger. And I would watch the pain on my sister's face that she's here visiting her father's finger. And it was all my fault, man. It's just all my fault. Well, I think, I'm not sure, but I think one of the conditions for his release was that he was to stay sober. One day he was released and he's on the phone fighting with my mother. My mother goes up to the end of the block where the police station is, and she says, when he gets home, tell him, come up and tell me, because he's drinking. And he comes home and he was drinking and he was lousy. So I went up and I told her. And it's she went into the police station and she said, go get him for whatever. So they sent two cops down. They walked onto the porch and he blew one in their stomachs out with a shotgun. He blew him right off the porch. It's not a good thing to do. About a half hour later, when he came out of the house, they shot him down dead. Shot him down dead underneath my sister's bedroom window while she watched him calling her name. This is a family disease. We affect a lot of people. I'm only hurting myself? No, you ain't. And he was my hero. Now, I'll tell you that story for good reason. I saw what alcohol could do. And I started drinking when I was 13. I was 16 years old when that happened. So 3 years before that happened, I was already, but I wasn't drinking every day, you know, I'm 13 years old, you get it when you get it, you know. And I swore I wasn't going to be like him. I was going to do that to my family. I wasn't going to be like that. Well, when I was 18, I was expelled from high school in my senior year. I know, a nice guy like me, you believe it? Gee. And a couple of the guys I hung with, and we decided we're going to stay drunk for the whole month. Socially, of course. Socially. And, you know, we ran out of money. Nobody's working, you know, we're teenagers, and we just got expelled from high school, and nobody's working, and we need money. And we made an amazing discovery. An amazing discovery. We had this old 55 Cadillac. I don't know if you know what that looks like. It looks like a Sherman tank. You know, it's got that little bump in the back, you know. Well, we found out that that trunk key for that Cadillac fit brand new Cadillacs all over the world. And back then, they didn't have them little donuts in there. They had the real spare tire. They had a real tire in there, full of air and everything. So we went shopping. And we got fork tires for our car. Then we got a spare in case we got a flat. And then we said, you know, we could sell these. We could sell these. And we could make some beer money. Well, an off-duty cop spotted us, and he chased us. Pulls up next to us at the traffic light, jumps out of the car, flashing his badge. He says, I'm a cop, pull over. And I said, you could have got that out of the Cracker Jack's box. We took off. And now the police report says, I don't know if you know about that, people have to tell you what happened, you know. But the police report said that we reached speeds of 60, 70 miles an hour. And we came to this real hard right turn. And we tried to get him to go off that way. So we tried to kill him. And the only way he's going to stop the car is he started shooting into the car, into the trunk. Now, I wasn't driving. I was the wheel man. I was next to the driver. And I heard those pellets bouncing around inside the trunk. And I looked over to him and I said, he's got a gun. He's probably a cop. You might as well pull over. That matter-of-factly, like I said to him, let's go to the quick check for a cup of coffee. And alcohol was taking my ability to care. And I didn't know it. It was stealing my ability to care. And I had no idea. He was a rookie. We were pulling, and he's got a gun in my face, and I could see the bullets, and he's shaking more than I'm shaking. I was booked. I went to court. I put my hand on the Bible. I lied through my teeth. And I was slapped on the hand, called a bad boy, and sent on my way. And I was 18. And I just blew that all off until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, stopped drinking long enough to come out of the fog to realize I was 18 years old. I was drinking. I had the cops shooting at me exactly the way my father died 2 years before that. And I swore I wasn't going to be like him. Things that make you go, But I was only 18. Party's not over yet. I didn't get to Alcoholics Anonymous until I'm 26. I got a ways to go yet. And I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous because that stupid judge thought it was a good idea. Thank you, God. And my recovery began. I'll tell you another little story. I got my medical degree one night and I was cutting a bullet out of my buddy. It's crazy stuff, really. It was just so crazy, you know. I'm cutting him with a razor blade, like on his leg, you know, just cutting him and cutting him. Just nutty. Nutty, crazy. That, and those are only two. There's hundreds of crazy stuff. Hundreds of them. So I started to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, get a sponsor, join a group, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I thought, what are you? Oh my God. So I did. Not so much because I wanted to become a nice guy. I just wanted to keep the judge at bay. Well, that sponsor gave me my 90-day pin, and he went out and got drunk. But in that 90-day period, I figured that ain't the way to do this. I learned at least that much. And in that 90-day period, I met a guy who had it. I don't know what it is. I didn't know what it was. Whatever it is, this guy had it. I could feel it. I could just, he's talking, I could feel it coming from him. And whatever it was, I'm going to go for it. And I was about ready to ask him to be my sponsor. And we had a New Year's Eve party. And right at this, after the ball went down, we had a meeting. Well, he's chairing a meeting, and he gets up, and he introduces the first speaker, sits down in the chair, and dies. He never got to introduce the second speaker. And I'm thinking, I need a sponsor, man. Don't do this stuff. Well, he showed me how to live. And he showed me how to die. He died sober. He died active in Alcoholics Anonymous. He died around all of his friends. I don't plan on doing that tonight. Wow. Man, oh man, oh man. It's wonderful. Ed Crawford was his name. And there's a halfway house in New Jersey named Crawford House. And that house was named after him. But I knew I needed a sponsor, so I found this other sponsor, and I had that sponsor for the better part of 25 years, 30 years, and that sponsor died, and I got the sponsor that I got now today, Doug, the one that knows where I am right now. And I learned a lot through sponsorship and activity like this. I had 85 days, and my sponsor said, "We have this commitment here, go speak." And I said, whoa. I said, I don't even have 90 days. My sponsor said, "Don't tell him." And I was told many, many times after that, when I had some problem with it, "Who are you doing this for, Bill, anyway?" Well, I'm doing it for me. I got hopes that somebody will benefit from this. If you don't, you don't. It's not up to me. It's up to God. My job is to make myself available. My job is to try to the best of my ability to share what I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you're looking at a guy who could not stay stopped. I could stop. I could always stop. You know, I met a guy at one of my first meetings. He says, "You can think you're not drink for one day, come to a meeting tomorrow?" I said, "Yeah." And I'm driving home and I'm thinking, "Wait a minute, don't drink today and come to a meeting tomorrow. And tomorrow's gonna come today. This guy's talking about not drinking." But I started to learn a lot coming to Alcoholics Anonymous about how to be a person, how to feel my feelings. I ain't going to do it tonight, but I allow myself to cry. Usually by myself, I ain't that smart or I ain't that good to be crying in front of other people, but I allow myself to have my feelings now today. "Holy mackerel, you got to be kidding me. Shut up, sit down, be quiet," you know? How do you do that? How do you feel your feelings anyway? Man, well, practice. Just don't drink. And the importance of the first drink. I get it. What are you talking about, this first drink stuff? What are you talking about? I've got an allergy. Look, I know about allergies. My oldest brother, Tom, in the springtime, he turns into this monster. His face explodes and, you know, and it's like he's allergic to ragweed, you know. And his body is saying, "Hey, with the ragweed, enough with the ragweed, man." Now, my next brother, Jim, back in the day, he went into the Navy, and he spent more time in the Navy hospital than he did in the Navy because he's allergic to wool, and they have wool uniforms, and they didn't figure that out for a while. But he can't wear wool. Now, my baby sister, Donna, she can't eat walnuts. She eats walnuts, she's going to the hospital. Her throat closes up. Even if, you know, if she's eating cake, there's walnuts in the cake. She don't know the walnuts are in the cake. She eats the cake, she's still going to the hospital. Her body says so. She's got an allergy. Now me, I could sit in a field of ragweed with a wool jacket on, eating walnuts all day long. Same father, same mother. I don't got that kind of problem with allergies. See, the kind of problem, the allergic reaction I have is just the opposite. You see, my sister's body is saying, "Hey, no more walnuts." My brother's body is saying, "Hey, no more wool, no more ragweed." My body says, "Alcohol, I have a drink of alcohol. I set up something inside of me that's biological. And my body demands more. No matter what I think. No matter how I feel about it. I thought, oh man, I'm in deep. This is not good information here. I'm in deep, man. That happened to me all the time. That happened to me. Because I had questions when I came here. I had two basic questions. One is, when I stopped drinking, I stopped drinking because there's no other alternative. It's like, you know, I'm throwing up. And I'm throwing up stuff that a human being ain't supposed to throw up. I feel like I'm going to throw up inside out, my throat, my head. Oh my God, I can't do this anymore. I do it again. I do it again. And now I'm back at the toilet throwing up. I'll do it again. And it's like, I don't get it. You know, when I was a little kid, I was a dumb kind of little kid because I wanted to know what dirt tastes like. And I went out into my mother's kitchen. I got a big old spoon and I went outside. I found a nice fertile spot. I dug in, you know. You know? Now, I had the same reaction to alcohol the first time I had it. I drank some of my father's beer and I was like, the only difference is that I'm up here tonight in my 70s. I have never gone back for seconds for dirt. I had my fill. But not so with alcohol. I keep going back and I keep going back. You see, how come I can't just stop? When I do stop, I just can't stay stopped. Well, they say, well, Bill, you got an alcoholic mind. And you have what they call an obsession with alcohol. And, you know, you think about alcohol and you think different about alcohol than them out there. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? And it's like, well, let's take somebody who don't have alcoholism. What they think about jobs, they think about money, they think about sex, they think about vacations. Well, I think about all of those things. I think about my job in relation to alcohol. And I think about money in relation to alcohol. And I think about sex in relation to alcohol. Whoa, I think about alcohol a lot. And I didn't know it. I really didn't know it. I think about alcohol a lot, man. Yeah, we have a mental obsession with alcohol. And you think about alcohol different than them people out there. You know, the ones, you know who they are. The sippers. They sip and they leave it. They, you know. I ain't like them. Okay, all right. So that explains why I quit, but I don't stay quit because I think about it all the time. I have a mental obsession. All right, I got it. How come now? How come when I go out thinking I'm going to have a couple and I end up having 35? I went out one night and I was thinking I was going to go out and I was going to chase women and I was going to fight and I ended up so drunk I couldn't get my head off of my buddy's back seat. And I'm trying to get my head off of the back seat. I can't. And it's like, how did this happen to me? This is not my plan. I want to go out and party. I want to have fun. I'm half embalmed. And they say, well, once you start drinking, you have this allergic reaction, where your body takes over and demands you have more. I thought, oh man, that happens. This happened to me over and over. This didn't happen to me once or twice. This has happened to me over and over and over again. And I would forget. And it's like people in my life, they say, you forgot! The only answer I had, yeah. Yeah, and I forget stuff that ain't easy to forget. You know, I forget the bracelets. You know? I forget, I woke up outside my car, and I saw about 10 of my car, but if I did this, there was one. And it was my car wrapped around a telephone pole on fire. Because I drive better when I drink. I did the most honorable thing I could do. I ran away. And I ran home and I told them all that I'm going to go across the street to the police department, because now I lived across the street from the police department. I'm going to go across the street from the police department, and I'm going to tell them my car was stolen. And I went out to my car to get my camera, and I found out my car was gone. And they said, okay. Now I'm bringing it into my family. Want them to be lying for me, covering up for me. So I walked across the street. First I changed my clothes, you know. And I walked across the street, went into the police station. I walked into the police station. He looks at me, and he already knew who I was because of my father. And he says, where you been? I said, what? I said, my car stolen. He says, your car was in an accident 3 hours ago. I said, really? Was anybody hurt? He said, get out of here. He knew. He said, just get out of here. And he was letting me go because of what happened with my father. So I just went on my merry way. You know, and my life was crazy with booze. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and they told me, don't drink one drink for one day. That's what I did today. It worked today. Nothing has changed in 40 years. Nothing has changed. They told me 40 years ago, September 30th, 1975, they said, Bill, don't drink one drink for one day. It was true then. It's been true every single day since then. And it's true today. I didn't drink today. And that's why I'm standing here sober, breathing. Oh God, God, give me one last chance. This is it, man. This is it. But I found a wonderful, wonderful life here in Alcoholics Anonymous. My daughter didn't talk. I got married in that process. That's a whole story in itself, you know. And my daughter didn't talk to me the better part of 20 years. And a nice guy like me. And she got pregnant. She had this little baby girl. I went down there to see if I could see her. I walked into her apartment and she handed me my granddaughter. Because Alcoholics Anonymous, that granddaughter is now 16 years old. They live here in Pennsylvania. And I have a good relationship with my daughter today, thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. She calls me up. She's usually crying when she calls me up. And she says, Dad, I just want somebody to put some sanity into my life. My first thought is, you got the right number? I put a lot of insanity into her life. And now she calls me because she knows that I can talk to her and listen to her problems and give her some AA solutions. She even knows that she used to say, "Oh, give me that AA shit," but now she's more willing to listen to it. And we have a good relationship today. Thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. My older brother, Jim. My mother used to compare me to him, and he was always the good, shiny, good, smart one. He's got something like about 10 college degrees in basket weaving, 1, 2, and 3, you know? and he's loaded. He's got a boatload of money. He's got boats, cars, houses, and nobody gave it to him. He worked for it. But every time he had a success, I was compared to being a screw up. And I would never show up. I cheated him out of a brother to share things with. He couldn't share his successes with me. Well, after coming to AA for a while, I went down and I talked to him and I told him about it. And that relationship started to heal. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started sponsoring guys. And he comes, one of the guys that sponsored comes up to me today, one day, and he says, you want to go to the convention? I said, sure. He said, I'll get the tickets. I'll get the plane tickets. I said, what plane tickets? What's he talking about? He says, well, it's in Minnesota. Minnesota? How are we getting there? He said, we're flying. I said, we ain't. No, man. No, I can't say no. You know, he said, I sponsored this guy. I'm supposed to look good. I'm shit scared. You know? I was never on a plane. Oh, man. And he's buying tickets. So I got on a plane with him, and I went to Minnesota. And we flew back, and I got past the fear. I think that was possible. Big Book says, well, I'll grow our fear. Are you kidding me, man? I did that. Without drinking. I was shit scared, man. And I did it. Yeah! No. So, I'm going to meetings, and I went to a meeting I never went to because I was out of my mind one day, and I met the prettiest girl I ever met in my entire life. This Vin. She wasn't hot, she was smoking. But I got this idea in my head. You see, when I was married, my wife and I would fight all the time because we don't go out. You don't take me out. And she would dance with the vacuum cleaner. She loved dancing. And she wanted me to go, I can't do that. Why? They're watching me. I don't know who they are. But they're watching me. And I tried a couple times. I have a couple shooters before I go. And I start fights and stuff. So now she's divorcing me. I'm in AA. And I hear about this dance in Upper Saddle River. It's way up north, almost by New York. That's the young people's group having a dance. Oh, man, I got to do this. So I get in my car. I go up to this dance. I walk in. And who's at the door? Lady Pretty.
Hey, Bill. Hi, how are you? Come on and dance.
No, man, no, I gotta go have a coffee. I gotta have a drink. I'll go get a coffee. She walks away, she comes back after a couple dances. Hey, Bill, come on and dance. I said, let me get another coffee. Now, I just traveled something like 100 miles to go dance. The prettiest girl in the entire world just asked me to dance twice. I'm so scared. I'm just so scared, man. She comes up a third time. And I said, well, guys, before, she said, look, she says, if you're sober and you're in recovery, you can do anything you want to do. And I said, she's right. So I danced with her like I had a 2x4 strapped to my back. And as soon as the music turned off, I got in my car and I ran away. And I drove back home. And yes! The whole way home. I did it, man. I did it. I did it without drinking. Are you kidding me? Another fear. Yes! Then I found out that they had a club over in New York. It's a club. I was over there every Friday, Saturday, Sunday winning dance contests. Yeah, this goofy, clumsy, awkward guy is now winning dance contests. A little obsessive compulsive, but are you kidding me? Here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can overcome my fear. Are you kidding me, man? I didn't plan for this. I'm trying to stay out of prison with that stupid judge. That's all I want. And here, I'm learning to get over my fears. Oh, this ain't what I planned. Alcoholics Anonymous is such a wonderful place. Such a wonderful place. How much time I got here? All right, in here. We try to hang on to our old ideas. What are you talking about? Come on, man. What are you talking about? Come on. Well, in my case, I'm talking about years in sober in recovery. This just didn't happen in my first year. I had multiple years, and I bought a car. I bought a car, and it was the prettiest car you ever want to see. I tell the dashboard to call my sponsor, and it does. You know, it's a cool car. I drive that car off the lot and I start crying like a baby. So now I can talk to myself. And I said, all right, Bill, what's going on, man? And I'm crying. I said, well, I don't deserve this. I thought we dealt with this. Come on, man, I thought we dealt with this. You know, you don't deserve it. What's going on? And it's like, you know, you're crying like a baby. How old are you right now anyway? I was 16. Yeah, all right, so what's that got to do with anything? That's when my father was killed. So what? What's that got to do with anything? You don't deserve the car. You're 16 years old emotionally. And blah, 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 and that's when your father died. So what? What are you talking about? I don't know. A couple of days later, I wake up early in the morning. When I wake up in the morning is when God talks to me. Something. I don't know why, but he does. I wake up with this thought that ain't my thought. Very foreign to me. And I think, here's the thought. So you don't deserve the car, you're 16 years old, and blah, 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 and that's when your father died, and blah, 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 blah. What's that got? Well, I'm his Judas. I turned him in, and he was killed. piece of shit. Well, here's the thought. The thought is, oh yeah, what would he say? What do you mean? Well, I don't know who I'm talking. What do you mean? Yeah, what would he say? Oh man. Well, he had 13 brothers and 3 sisters, and he had a pretty tough father, and my father was pretty tough too. And he said to me on more than one occasion, getting right in my face, he'd say, you do what your mother tells you to do. What? Well, I did. I did. She told me to go up and tell her, and I did. And he dealt with it the way he dealt with it. Because he was shooting back at these cops, and he's screaming at them, you ain't taking me back to jail, you're going to have to kill me. And they did. And he dealt with it the way he dealt with it. But I did what he told me to do. And I could feel it leave me. I could feel it leave me. And I'm free of that. Are you kidding me? We tried to hang on to our old ideas. That was an old idea. I didn't know that. I had no idea that that was dominating me and controlling me and hurting me. I had no idea until this happened. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been set free of that. More healing. This is more than just not drinking. This is a wonderful, wonderful way of life. So if I could tell anybody here anything tonight, I'm going to tell you the most important piece of information I have ever heard in my entire life. You ready? Don't drink one drink for one day and try and help somebody else stay sober. Thank you.